T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Big morning show on this Monday morning on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sweet 16 is set. Chalky, 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 chalk in the NCAA tournament. But I got to tell you, I just tweeted out because I just had to. This is an optimistic kind of Monday for me because, frankly, the kids are all right. I mean, you have Trae Young. I just did a thing. Here's my tweet, Hugh. At my Twitter, at John Fricke. I just tweeted out, now do you get why I'm so optimistic about Atlanta's future? Our time is now, and it's a picture of Trae Young with Ronald Acuna, Joseph Martinez, and Calvin Ridley. It's like...
A lot of young players.
Yeah. Stars.
Yeah. But you know, it's funny, because I just shout out to my man Ezekiel Love, way up north, that listens to our show.
Uh-huh.
He was telling me, he just tweeted me, said, oh, I knew Trae was going to be a star all along. I was like, dog, love you to death. Love you to death. Nobody saw that. It was a little rough. It was a little rough growing. But no, he talked about how he saw the passing skills and things of that nature. Yeah, he had those. It's starting to come together for him now. I think the future is bright. I think Trae is the piece, or could potentially be the piece, that's going to attract other free agents to want to come here. I really do. And the more that he grows and becomes a star in this NBA, a lot of guys are going to look at that and be like, yeah, I definitely want to play in Atlanta because of him.
Yeah, and then that's why I think Travis Schlenk was kind of jumping a little bit ahead, because I don't think you were wrong, Hugh, because I kind of agree with you that, you know, you go out, you do the draft this year, right, and hopefully you get 2 first-rounders and you have 3 second-rounders, and you do the draft this year, and then next year you enter. But I don't think so. I think Tony Ressler and Travis Schlenk are starting to look at free agents now. Because if you could get a Klay Thompson, if you could get somebody like that, and you can get another draft pick, I'm starting to think that maybe the Hawks are going, we've got John Collins, we've got Trae Young, we've got Kevin Huerter, we're going to have this guy and this guy, these 2 young people. If we can get another guy who is going to come in here as a free agent to help our team, there's no reason. We look at the East and think that maybe we can make some serious noise next year.
That might be a little – that might be moved up a little early. But I see where you're coming from, you know, with the East being the way that it is, it being basically a toss-up mm-hmm. when you look at it. You know, you look at I don't know what the standings are, but you got the Sixers at the top, the Celtics in Milwaukee. So, yeah, Toronto, the usual suspects. So, yeah, I can see that being something that the timetable could be moved up. We're talking about maybe in the third season of Coach Pierce being here. We're talking about playoffs. Mm-hmm. We're getting seedings, a pretty decent seed. So, yeah, I can definitely see that.
Especially if Kawhi leaves the East and goes West.
Yeah, if that's the case.
You know,
that's the case.
And they're having a little bit of a meltdown in Boston right now.
Yeah, but I think that you also have to look at it like this. Jimmy Butler being with the Sixers, that could probably swing the balance of power.
Mm-hmm.
You still have Joel Embiid who's coming into his own.
But with John Wall's injury, you know, nobody talks about divisions because nobody pays any attention. People forget mm-hmm. about divisions. The only reason we even have divisions, in theory, there's 2 reasons. One is so that there's more division games, so Boston gets to play the Knicks more, for example, or the Celtics more, and it's not just even. And the second thing is it's a tiebreaker should 2 teams be tied in the conference standings as far as home, you know, as far as home is concerned, home and home when you get to the playoffs. But you know, we'll get more into that. I know that we're over a far field. I'm just excited about basketball, and we'll talk more about the Hawks. We'll talk more about the draft. We also have to talk about the Braves, though, because we got to get to it, because the Braves are back home today. My point of this tweet was that here comes Ronald Acuna Jr., and you have this Braves team coming into town where they're bringing in the next generation of stars that are going to go along with the Trae Youngs, the Ronald Acunas, the Josephs, the Calvins, the Deons, and the next generation of stars are going to be pitchers. And they're going to get a baptism by fire. And maybe this is a good thing, Hugh. Maybe it turns out that Gausman and Folty being on the shelf for, who knows, April. We need them. Don't get me wrong. We need them to come in and be part of this team. Absolutely need them, especially Foltynewicz, but really both. But maybe it's not a bad thing that you're going to be starting, because Bryce Wilson's going to get the ball in game 2 and Kyle Wright's going to get the ball in game 3. Let's just go. You know, what the hell? Let's go.
Might as well. Early enough. You want to see what you have. And who knows, John? You might have some young men on that roster, some young pitchers that might surprise you in big moments. I think that you're looking at it could potentially be like it was last year for the Atlanta Braves as far as the pleasant surprise, as far as, you know, going further than a lot of people anticipated them to go. I mean, this is the time to find out. And I know a lot of people were upset about the fact that they didn't do a whole lot in free agency as far as pitching is concerned. That was one of the things that we both said was a big issue with this team, especially the relief pitchers, that they didn't bode well. But I still believe that was a product of your starting pitching not doing well. So now with your Fulton Evans being hurt and A.J. Minter being a little banged up, your pitching being a little bit banged up, you're going to give these young pitchers a chance to pitch, and they're going to get a chance to stay. Because if they do well, then they're going to stay. So you have to see what your farm club is all about, John. You have to.
Well, let's keep in mind, Kimbrel is still out there. Yeah. I mean, opening day is coming Thursday. Who knows what kind of headlines we could have this week. Craig Kimbrel doesn't have a team. And so if he's not finding the market for him, maybe he does come and say, okay, fine, all right, who knows? It's not a done deal yet. And Alex Anthopoulos showed last year that if he needs to make a late-season move, he can. And he did with Kevin Gausman, and Gausman came over from the Orioles and was a key factor for the Braves down the stretch. Now Gausman talking yesterday and telling Major League Baseball MLB TV about where he stands from a health perspective.
You know, I feel good right where I'm at. You know, I'm a little behind schedule, but, you know, I'll be ready for the first time through the rotation.
So that's good news. And what that means is you're going to go out there with Tayron, Wilson, and Wright against the Phillies. You're going to come home. You're going to pitch Sean Newcomb in the home opener. Then you'll probably go back to Tayron. You may go to Max Fried. And then in the third series, when you get through again, then it'll be like Tayron and Wright or somebody, and then Gausman. So maybe about game 10,
mm-hmm.
Gausman will be in there. So that's, we're not having to wait forever and a day to get to Kevin Gausman.
Yeah. But I'll tell you what, John, I think that the guy that everybody's going to have eyes on, all eyes on, obviously is Julio Tehran and what he's going to bring to the table. I mean, you know, we talk about how he's been working on certain pitches in this offseason and what he needs to do to improve his pitching. I know it's the first game of the series, first game of the season. I'm going to need at least six innings, six and two-thirds maybe. I mean, I was going to make that a little less, but I think to start out and you look at his history and what he's been on opening day, like six and two-thirds, maybe seven, I think he needs to get off to a good start. I think he needs to have a good day on the mound his first time
out. Yeah, because if he gets shelled on Thursday night,
yeah, it's gonna be, yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Friday morning, we're going to be banging heads on tables, right?
He needs to have a great day on the mound.
You know, that's, you know, and again, Josh Tomlin was picked up by the Braves. Let's not forget this. He made his first start in spring training as a, you know, stopgap guy for Fulton Evans.
Yeah, a little bit older, just in here and trying to hold the fort, you know, being a bridge for some of the young guys and let some of the other pitchers get healthy.
Right. So, I mean, I understand. But I think this year really has got to be – I've already – it's not resigned myself to this fact because it's not a resignation. But I think moving forward for the Atlanta Braves to have success over this period of time, over these, you know, say in the next couple of 3 years here, what are you looking at from a pitching perspective? You're looking at Mike Foltynewicz. You're looking at hopefully Sean Newcomb. You're looking at somebody else probably from the outside, okay, that you would pick up. God love you if you pick up somebody that's, you know, even in the universe of a Greg Maddux. But, I mean, a really good pitcher from the outside. And then two, whatever the two best of these young kids are, okay, mm-hmm. We're talking about Wright and Wilson who are getting first crack at it, but we could go back to Kobe Allard. You're talking Ian Anderson. You're talking Tuki Toussaint. You're talking all these guys. And that's your five that you're going to go forward with. That's going to be – and I kind of would like to settle that this year. Mm-hmm. And if we could settle that this year and make the playoffs, I think that would be a great year. If they make the playoffs, it would be a great year because I have no doubt in the guys that you're putting out there on the field. I think you have a starting eight that is going to be very solid, a starting seven, because you could float somebody else into a certain position. I don't know where, mm-hmm. maybe right field for Marquez, and that's, you know, Pache or – or, you know, maybe, you know, Camargo finds a spot somewhere in the lineup. But I'm confident in the speed, the defense, and the power of this team and that eight. And I still think that there's adjustments to be made for the bullpen and for the starting rotation.
I agree.
But I think for the most part that, you know, right now let's just go ahead and figure out this rotation. And I think if the Braves are serious about this, Hugh, they got to get Kimbrel in here this week.
Not this week, John. Not this week. I think that you still have a little bit of time. Like, we haven't played any meaningful games yet. And I think it's you're judging everything about this pitching staff on last year. And I understand. I understand that. And I get why you are. But things have changed. And you want to see – you're giving these young pitchers a chance. You have to see what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think everything is predicated on your young pitching. It has to be. And if that – for whatever reason, and I don't think this is going to happen, but for whatever reason, if these young pitchers get out there and they just stink the joint up, I mean, like, totally stink it up. I mean, just get out there and get rocked, then you start to seriously consider, you know, bringing him in. But I think you have to give them a chance. That has been your strength. That every story that I ever read about the farm system has been their pitching, has been their strength. You got to give them a shot at some point.
You know, I wonder, with Minter hurt, I don't know. I mean, Vizcaino is kind of an enigma to me. At times he looks really good, and at times he's not as Dow Jones as Minter, because, you know, there's A.J. Minter and, oh, God,
no, there's something like, wow. I mean, sometimes he gives you a wow moment, but sometimes he gives you one of them, damn it, man.
Yeah,
he gives you, right? Damn it, man.
Boston. which turned out to be a blessing in disguise. We didn't know it at the time. The bullpen, though, the idea of having a true closer, if Kimbrel is still Kimbrel, and I still think he is, the idea of having a true closer on this team to shut the door down, to bail some of these kids out and let them relax, I don't know if you could put a value on that.
Yeah. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but you still got it. You know, the setup guy is somebody else that right. you have to look at.
Right.
And if how good is a Craig Kimbrel going to be, John, if he's pitching every 2 days or every night or more than he should be pitching at the beginning of the season, because you're starting pitching, you're piecemealing pitching together.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of this hinges on how well or how much production you get from your starting pitching. I really do. Because if you can get that quality,
oh, sure.
if you can get those quality starts,
sure, I totally agree.
Then you're taking a lot of pressure off of everybody.
Yeah, I mean, Kimbrel didn't do you any good if you're starting.
Yeah, if you're starting him every night,
in the fifth inning every night, yeah, no, I mean, if you're in the bullpen on an average 4 2/3, innings out of your bullpen or something over the first month, that's why I said survive April. They've got to just survive April. But we're talking about the Braves, who are home tonight for an exhibition game at SunTrust Park against the Cincinnati Reds. Then play a game tomorrow afternoon at 1:10 at SunTrust Park. These are two exhibition games against the Reds. And then they go take a day off and go to Philadelphia to start the season on Thursday, where Aaron Nola will face Julio Teheran in the season opener. And the big stories this spring, of course, are going to be, you know, now to the fore. I think it'll be interesting to see tonight where they bat Acuna. Everything is pointing towards cleanup, and that's where we're going to start with him. That's going to be the other big story. Will he be the cleanup hitter?
I think he is.
I think he is too.
I think he is. I think I did read that. I think I did see that somewhere, because I got my MLB app that I downloaded, and it gave me Braves alerts.
And I hope and I trust that Brian Snitker is going to be flexible with this. Look, this may work out extremely well to have him in that spot, and it may just be great. But at the same time, it's like, you know, the more you can do in terms of at bats is the more you can do. And the idea of batting him, you know, in the leadoff spot, for me, I said what I thought would be the best thing. I thought what the best thing would be to bat Acuna leadoff, Donaldson second, and Freddie third, and then bat Ender in the number 9 spot. And then after the first time through at the top of the first inning, bottom of the first inning, you essentially become Ender with the leadoff, and then you have Acuna second, Donaldson third, and Freddie fourth. That's how I would handle it. Because you put him at the top of the lineup and you get more opportunities for him to see pitches. That's all you want, more at-bats, Hugh. He'll get 25 or 30 more at-bats batting at the leadoff spot than he would in the fourth spot.
Yeah, but if you get him in that fourth spot, John, you get him driving in home runs, you get him driving in runs, that's even better. I mean, because what do you think about it last year, all of the solo shots that he hit, that we sat here and said, damn it. If there were some runners, they don't move the runners. They don't, when runners are in score position, they don't move the runners. So by him being in that fourth spot, he gets an opportunity to drive some runs in.
He does.
That was important. That was one of the things that killed the Braves last year. because they were hitting them solo shots. Mm-hmm. He was hitting solo shots. So you put him in that position, you're giving him the opportunity to drive some runs.
Well, all I tell you is whoever's batting fifth, if it's Markakis or whoever's going to end up in that five hole, mm-hmm. they've got to hit because otherwise they're going to be pitching around Ronald Acuña.
And that's the thing. And with the roster, with them setting the lineup the way they're setting, necessarily say it's going to be Ashton Stone.
You know, I mean, if Markakis for suddenly isn't hitting, you know, because Duvall, I got no faith in Adam Duvall. You know, if he's even going to be on the team, you know, I mean, could cut him. I mean, I think he's out there. They're trying to figure out what to do with him. If they can't find a bat for five, they're going to be a lot of – you're going to be waving. Ronald Acuña's getting a lot of walks, okay? Just saying. Because I'm going to try and – he's suddenly you're going to try and avoid this kid. That's how much respect he has right now.
Yeah. But this is a lineup that I think you could definitely play with as the season goes on. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of those things you could definitely, you know, like move guys around and see where potentially they could be better served. But it all depends on that pitching, John. It's that starting pitching, and you got to give those young cats a chance. You got to give them a chance to see what they can do.
We're going to talk about the a lot about college basketball coming up, about Ron Hunter in this hour and what Georgia State's going to do, right?
He gone.
Clark Kellogg's going to join us at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. We're going to get into more NCAA action. But next up, we have to kind of bring you up to speed on some of the things going on in the NFL. The Falcons and Julio, Gronk is retired, and more. As the league meetings begin. So the NFL's got – look, the NFL's not going to let everybody else have the headlines. You know that. And there's big NFL news that we have to pass along to you. We'll do that next.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
It is gone! A grand slam for Acuña!
The Braves open up SunTrust Park Monday, April 1st. And Dukes and Bell have you covered live.
Baseball is back in the ATL. And nobody's got you covered like us. Because the game is everywhere.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
You didn't really think that the National Football League was going to let baseball opening day or the Sweet 16, that they were going to really let them slide and not grab headlines, did you? You don't understand the machine that is the NFL PR, communications, spin room, whatever you say. And here we are in the throes of the Sweet 16. You know, everybody's talking about Taco and Zion and baseball opening day, and around here we're all talking about Acuña and the kids, and you know, hopefully the kids are all right among the pitching staff. And through it all, the NFL has got news, and we'll get into some of the NFL news today. I'll just tease this up a little bit. Welcome back to the Morning Show with John and Hugh. The league meetings began yesterday. And that means competition committee, and they're talking about rules changes, and we know what rule we're talking about when we're talking about rules changes. Will they let pass interference be reviewable? We'll talk about that coming up. They're going to decide whether or not they're going to allow that to happen this week. So you see, there's a big headline coming by Wednesday. You can see that already. It may come as early as today. We don't know. But there's other news, including the Falcons, who we understand, because Mike Freeman of Bleacher Report saying now that Julio's deal could get him $20 million a year. That's not a surprise, Hugh.
Not at all. No. Not at all. We kind of figured that Julio was going to get broke off. My question would be, what's up with Grady's money? I'm pretty sure that as a player, you look at Grady's situation and you look at what he's done and how hard he's worked to put himself in this position, mm-hmm. and to not have that guaranteed money. I mean, that's probably something that's probably a tough pill to swallow. And he's seeing everybody else is going around. And now, granted, I know he's not the same player as Julio, and he doesn't mean as much. But Grady's done everything that's been asked of him. So I'm pretty sure that he feels some kind of way about this. Hopefully, this is one of those things that – and I know Thomas Dimitroff said this – that they have time to negotiate this all the way up to almost training camp or something like that he says. So hopefully they get that situation taken care of.
Chris Mortensen saying that Julio and the Falcons haven't even really – traded exchanges yet, but they kind of know what the ballpark is going to be. For those of you, by the way, for those of you who don't know, Mort Report is a pretty good follow for Falcons fans, because you may not know this about Chris Mortensen, but Chris Mortensen was here covering the Falcons for the AJC. He was the AJC's Falcons guy for a long time before he went to the network. So he is still well tapped in to Atlanta. But I could see, you know, Julio's going to get paid. We know what the market is set for Julio. We see Antonio Brown. We see, you know, OBJ. We see what the market is saying for wideouts. And Julio's going to get his money. I got to tell you, Hugh, as you sit here on March the 25th this morning, I think that Grady's going to play this year under the tag.
There's a good chance that he will. It's going to be interesting to see how he handles it. You know, Grady's a class act. I don't anticipate Grady holding out. I don't anticipate him doing anything that's going to put him in a negative light. But it's one of those things when you think about it, John, I've never been in a position to be a franchise tag guy, but it's probably not a good feeling. Everybody that I've ever talked to that has been around somebody who's been franchised, that's one of those things where it's the player's not happy. Mm-hmm. Because really and truly there's no security. You're playing under that 1 year tender, and if anything happens, that's it for you. You know, no guarantee, money, nothing like that. It's one of those things where it's not a good feeling.
I have a sense that the Falcons offer, and this is just my guess here. Mm-hmm. The Falcons offer to Grady is the Falcons offer to Grady, and Grady's people are saying, no, we want more, and the Falcons offer coming back and saying, our offer to you is our offer to you. In other words, the Falcons are not moving. They talk about negotiations. I think the Falcons are saying, look, we think that this is fair market value, and Grady's people are looking at bigger. So let's just say that's the case. Okay, let's just say, for the sake of argument, let's say that's the case. Then who's taking the bigger risk? Because then the playing under the tag becomes a mutual thing. Okay, it's not one-sided. Mm-hmm. Falcons have made what they think is a fair market offer. If Grady wants to accept it, he can. Grady is, you know, you could say, well, the Falcons aren't paying Grady enough, or Grady's asking for too much, depending on either side of the line. But who's taking the bigger risk? The Falcons, in the fact that Grady could have a blowout year and they could lose Grady, they could lose him, or is Grady taking the bigger risk because of injury?
I would probably say the Falcons, because this is the way it was told to me by my agent at the time. When you look at the NFL now and you look at how the game is played, there are no such really things as career-ending injuries. I mean, there are, but when you look at it from, like, say, if you get a knee or something, like, knock on wood, not saying Grady's going to get any of that, but I'm just saying there's no career-ending injuries. So that's kind of off the table. But you want that guaranteed money. You want that security. You want that financial security, knowing that you're going to be somewhere for a long time. Now, this is the risk that the Falcons are – I think the Falcons are taking the most risk, because what if Grady goes out and he does have that Pro Bowl year? You know, and I know you got Fletcher Cox and you have Aaron Donald there, that it's probably going to be hard for that to happen, but what if he does? What if he's like one of those guys can't play and he's the third alternate? He's the third guy. Or he is the third guy, because I think they take 3D tackles, if I'm not mistaken. Who knows? But – if he's that guy, then now when you go to the table, whatever money you were asking for that they didn't want to give you, that money's been bumped up, because now he has Pro Bowl by his name. So that's the risk that you're taking. But at the same time, Grady's probably looking at it like, you know, later round draft pick, he's already outplayed Vic Beasley. He's already outplayed him. And when you look at it from a money standpoint, John, you're paying what, Vic Beasley, like almost $15 million. You're going to pay Grady about the same amount of money. That's going to count against your books. It would do you. It would better serve the Falcons if they could get a deal done.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But if they can't, they're cool with that, I'm assuming. But it would better serve them if they get all of that money off the books early.
Yeah, no question it would serve the Falcons. And you got to be careful here, because the Falcons are looking at these two long term contracts. Pittsburgh put itself into cap hell. Okay. And they put themselves into cap. Think about the Antonio Brown deal. The real killer for them isn't that they watch Antonio Brown go to the Raiders. It's the $21 million dead cap hit that they had to eat. And the reason Pittsburgh does that is because they front load all of their contracts with so much guaranteed money in order to lessen the – see, they play a game. You pay a ton of money up front, and that lessens your you know, the impact this year. Like if you paid Grady a ton of money up front, it wouldn't be a $14.2 million cap hit. You might take that down. You may cut that in half, down to $7 million, and give yourself enough money to go out and get another player. That's great, except that money then gets prorated to next year and the year after. If he's not playing, then you have what they call dead cap, and that just kills you. You know, you can't go out and make the moves.
Yeah.
And so you got to be very careful. It's a dangerous game to play for your future if you're out there playing this game. So we'll see what happens with the Falcons and with Julio and Grady, that is time now for both of those. We're talking about some of the headlines in the NFL. Get used to this idea. Apparently, they're going to have to change the name of the stadium in New England. Did you see this story? Procter & Gamble is saying, we're going to pull Gillette name off the stadium because of Bob Kraft. Wow. Yow!
Wow. They ain't playing.
Well, Bob Kraft came out and issued an apology. And his statement, I guess what he's trying to do, Hugh, because we're talking about this week is when he's supposed to do the court date.
Yeah.
So
he's supposed to figure out what he's going to say or how he's going to handle this.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's deep. But I will say this. If Gillette's taking the name off of it, you best believe there's going to be somebody in line to get that name.
Right, exactly.
And it's probably going to be even more money than Gillette was paying them.
Well, you know, and Gillette is just saying, you know, because, and it's not because, you know, Gillette razors themselves. I mean, it's because, you know, Procter & Gamble is a, you know, sells so much to women, you know, and we're talking about human trafficking. And,
yeah, and they probably got, you know, a lot of heat.
Yeah, they're probably getting heat. Right. And they don't want people, you know, out there, you know, outside Gillette Stadium protesting against Gillette. So they may pull the name off the stadium. Bob Kraft comes out, issues a statement, an apology. I'm truly sorry. I know I've hurt and disappointed my family, my close friends, my coworkers, our fans, and many others who rightfully hold me to a higher standard, et cetera, et cetera. And I think, you know, it's only right that Bob Kraft would do this, but the damage is done, Bob. The damage is done because now nobody will ever look at you and not think about the Orchids of Asia Day Spa.
You know what's funny, though, John? To a certain extent, you're right. They're not going to look at him like that until football season starts. And the Patriots potentially be in a Super Bowl run again and they win another ring. It's unfortunate. You know what's funny? I find it fascinating how some people get all up in their feelings about certain things for the moment. But then when it's all said and done, they kind of move on from that. And I feel like this is going to be the same thing with Bob Kraft.
See, and I think that Bob Kraft, combined with the announcement that Rob Gronkowski has retired, is he going to the WWE?
I think so. And I was talking to my man Tony Schiavone this morning. He thinks that might be the case.
Is he just going to be Gronk?
Yeah, that's his name. You know what? It's certain athletes that you know them by their nickname. You know, it's funny. This morning I was riding in, and they were talking about how Gronk was retiring. And for a long time, because I'm so used to calling him Gronk, I forgot his first name. I was trying to figure out what his first name was because he's known as Gronk.
Right.
Just like Shaq is known as Shaq. You know what I mean? And his Kobe is Kobe. You know what I mean? It's one of those names that when you say it, you say his name, you forget that he has a first name. He's like, oh, it's Gronk.
Yeah, Gronk.
And I was like, damn it, what is his name?
Yeah,
and
Tiger's the same way, right? Everybody knows his first name.
And John, for the life of me, I was calling this dude all the way in. I was like, is it Mike Gronkowski? I was like, that don't sound right. Mike Gronkowski? No, and I was like, is it Tony Gronkowski? No, that don't sound right either. And I just now remembered, oh, it's Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah, it's Rob, yeah. But he's just Gronk. So Gronk retiring, Gillette's name coming off the stadium, Bob Kraft in all sorts of heat. I don't know, maybe the Patriots' run is done. I can't say that for a fact. Ron Hunter's run is done at Georgia State. What does GSU do now that Ron Hunter is off to Tulane? And back to our coverage of the Sweet 16. Taco, 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 taco night last night. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Swing and drive! Long to deep right!
America's pastime is back as our Braves get set to kick off the season with a home opener versus the Cubs, Monday, April 1st.
Struck him out looking, and the Braves have won again. For exclusive Braves coverage, keep it here. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
For the second consecutive year, Houston is on to the second round of the NCAA tournament. A dominating performance from the Cougars. Final score, Houston 84, Georgia State 55.
Yeah, that partly tough loss for Georgia State. Welcome back to the morning show with John and Hugh. I was about to say partly due to the fact that Georgia State didn't play its best game, but also partly due to the fact that I think what you saw was that Houston is that good, that this team is a legitimate Final Four contender.
Yeah,
I mean, they are pretty darn good.
Yeah, I was not surprised when I heard some of the pundits on the broadcast say that they had Houston picked to go deep in their bracket. I was pretty impressed with what I saw from the Houston Cougars.
Yeah, I was really impressed with what Kelvin Sampson had in terms of not only Davis, who is obviously a great player, but also inside. They were going to be a tough out anyway for Georgia State. Now, the bigger news for Georgia State is that shortly after the game, the rumors began to circulate, and we now know for a fact that Ron Hunter is leaving Georgia State to accept the new head coaching job at Tulane. And, you know, a lot of fans, you know, celebrating and congratulating Coach Hunter for this. He was getting to be expensive. This is one of the reasons I said that Georgia State has to, if Georgia State wants to be a player, Hugh, there's something they're missing. And I know I'm jumping ahead in the conversation, but I'm going to say it anyway. Georgia State has to start thinking about, when they get their new basketball stadium, moving up in class in terms of the conference they're in.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to start thinking about leaving the Sun Belt and moving up and try and get in the American Conference. Because if they want to play with the big boys, they can't. Ron Hunter was making $500,000 a year or so at Georgia State, which for that level of low Division I, it's a good salary.
Damn good salary.
But it's not the, $1.5 million to $3 million to $5 million that you could get in the, depending on the level that you're at.
Mm-hmm.
And so they couldn't commit to a long term for Ron Hunter, and this is what's going to cost them because they need to go cheaper. And, that's just not a good business model. It's just not.
I don't. If that was the case,
I'll guarantee you the next coach makes less.
Yeah. Well, it all depends on who you try to go get. If you want to sustain the level that Coach Hunter or exceed that, then you're probably going to have to go out there and get you a really good named coach. If you just want a penny pinch, and I think that the fans of Georgia State would probably, balk at that, I think then you would go that route. But this is the thing. He's put them in a position where, they've been carrying the city. They've been carrying the city for a while. They've been carrying Atlanta for a while.
The whole state.
Yeah, the state for a while. So it's one of those things where I don't think you could shortchange the fans of Georgia State basketball. Now, I know that with Tom Crean and in Georgia, that might not be the case anymore. But still, you can't. I don't think you can cut corners when you're talking about getting a new basketball coach for Georgia State. I don't think that could be the case.
And I think Georgia State's just under a lot of pressure economically and I can understand that. I mean,
but I don't understand that, John. When you're building new facilities and stuff like that, and then you cutting corners with the coach. Now I understand that there's a budget and all this other stuff, but come on, man, you can't sell that to me. You can't sell me that he's making too much money and he's been. Was it 3 out of the last 5 years has been in the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I know. I tend to agree with you. I think that this is a mistake. I think Georgia State should have tried to lock in Ron Hunter, bite the bullet on whatever he was going to, depending on how much. Maybe Ron Hunter, I don't know what happened inside. Maybe Ron Hunter went into him and said, I need to be a $1 million coach. And they said, we just cannot pay you.
Well, he probably looked at it and it was a situation where, don't know what Tulane's paying him. Maybe it was a challenge. Maybe he felt that here, under whatever the stipulation that he was under, that there was nothing else that he could do here. Maybe that was the case. I mean, we're all speculating right now, but there had to have been something for him to make this move. And you heard him say in the cut that we played, John, that he kind of milled over it all night long. And then he finally came to the decision.
Well, and I don't blame him. According to the only, we don't have any hard numbers. I know that Ron Hunter made somewhere around $500,000. For his total package at Georgia State. And the advocate down in New Orleans said that they believe that Tulane offered him double that. So about $1 million a year to come to Tulane. So you can't blame him, because if he can get $1 million from Tulane, why wouldn't he go to Georgia State and say, Tulane's offering me $1 million, can you match it? And Georgia State says, no, we simply cannot.
Yeah, it's time to move on. My man Jonathan Franklin on the Twitter thinks that Tulane's plans are clear. They're trying to make inroads into the state of Georgia. And, they hired Willie Fritz from Georgia Southern.
Mm-hmm.
Now they hire Ron Hunter. So he feels like they're trying to make inroads into
Georgia. Well, Willie Fritz came from Texas to Georgia Southern. I mean, whatever the case is. I mean, yeah, sure, you want to recruit here. But when it comes to football, I mean, Louisiana football's been pretty good.
Yeah, they got some ballers in Louisiana.
Yeah, they just got to recruit their own state in Texas and whatnot. And that's what Willie Fritz can do. He coached in Texas, too. But for the state of Georgia, now Georgia State has an opening. I wouldn't expect it'll be a big-name hire. They may just elevate their assistant coach or something like that for now. Kennesaw State has an opening. Mercer has an opening. So there are a lot of openings in the state of Georgia. And the problem with this is, if you're Kennesaw State or Mercer or Georgia State, is you're up against the openings that we know exist in places like Alabama or Texas A&M. UCLA's got an opening. UNLV, Vanderbilt's open. There are a lot of big-name schools. Cal's open. Nebraska may be open. I mean, there are a lot of big-name schools with serious resources to be able to go after big-name coaches. So,
yeah.
You're fishing in a different pond.
Yeah, a little bit. And I know we were talking about Avery Johnson and whether or not he would get another opportunity. There's too many teams out there. There's too many college programs out there that need a head basketball coach that I'm pretty sure that even he will get another chance
somewhere. Or he might go back to the NBA.
Maybe. I don't – not as a head coach, though.
No, as an assistant coach.
Yeah,
which might be a good move for him. Go back to the NBA as an assistant coach for a couple of years. Kelvin Sampson did that, and look what he was able to do. He was able to parlay that. Rather than just jump into any opening you can grab in college basketball, take a couple of years off. Hopefully you get with a good NBA team. You know, pick the right team to go to so you maybe make a run at the NBA Finals and then go back into college coaching. That would probably be the best move Avery can make for himself. But Alabama's got a lot of money, and so Alabama can make a big-name hire, that's for sure. It'd be interesting to see what Alabama does because, you know, a lot of folks wondering, you know, when do you make that, you know, when do you make that big-name hire? And if you look around the SEC in basketball, Tom Crean was a big-name hire, okay? He was. Well, so, all right, fair enough, Avery Johnson was a big-name hire. All right.
He was.
He was. Fair enough. Avery Johnson was a big-name hire.
What were you trying to say he wasn't?
Was no, that, no, I just, I had to correct myself.
Did I miss that? Yeah.
You know,
did
I mean,
I,
that's
I
why.
That? Did I miss that?
No, I missed it a little bit. So, it's yeah, the price of poker going to go up in terms of coaching searches around America for some of these schools, especially with three big SEC schools like Alabama, A&M, and Vanderbilt all looking for coaches at the same time. We'll see what Georgia State does. I mean, the future of Georgia State basketball is still bright. You got the brand new – but again, I think they've got to start thinking about moving up in class, Hugh.
Yeah, but you're talking about – but what you're talking about, John, is because, you know, Coach Hunter was making as much money as he was making. You're talking about cutting corners. I mean, that's kind of what I'm hearing you say.
When you're in the Sun Belt, $1 million coach, yeah, that's out of the Sun Belts. You can't afford that. Yeah, that's just way too much for a Sun Belt coach. Clark Kellogg. Clark Kellogg, of course, college basketball analyst. Ask him what he thinks about the Sweet 16, about Duke, and we'll have to ask him about Taco Fall, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. Next with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.